Belgic Confession, Article 37, entitled The Last Judgment. Finally, we believe, according to the Word of God, when the time appointed by the Lord, which is unknown to all creatures, is come, and the number of the elect complete, that our Lord Jesus Christ will come from heaven, corporally and visibly, as he ascended with great glory and majesty, to declare himself judge of the quick and the dead, burning this old world with fire and flame to cleanse it. Now last week, as I hope you remember, the class was entitled 1,000 years and 1,260 days, date setting. And we mentioned a number of years when certain people thought that the millennium would start. So we had about 800, that was the view of Beatus of Libana, as Hilary remembers. Then around the year 1000, Y1K, some people thought Jesus was going to come back when it didn't happen. Then they thought, well, maybe our chronology is a bit wrong. Maybe he was born in 1001 or 1002. Then when that passed, some people thought, it's 1,000 years not after his birth, but after his cross. So then they ruled it out again in the 1030s. Then the millennium was going to start by the sword of the Anabaptists in Munster in northwest Germany in 1534. That's before the imperial army swept back in and massacred them. And of course, some people thought Y2K would see the second coming of Jesus, especially because they reckoned 4,000 years had passed between creation and the first coming of Christ. Another 2,000 would be 6,000. 6,000 years and then 1,000 year, sort of a millennium for each day of the week. Well, I wanted to add another number which cropped up in my reading this week. Another day, or year rather, when the millennium was to start. 1690. The millennium was supposed to start in 1690. So it's not the date of the, Brian, it's not the date of the Battle of the Boyne. 1690 was to have been the date of the millennium. And this was the teaching of Pierre Giraud, who was a Huguenot minister in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam, who was connected with the Camisards, or French prophets. 1685 was the year of the revocation of the Edict of Nantes. So the French king persecuted the Protestants. They were hard pressed. They lost their better leaders. And then a spirit of fanaticism came among them. Prophecy, tongue speaking, visions. And this man, Pierre Giraud, who corresponded with them, entered into that spirit, took a bizarre reading of Revelation and said, the millennium is going to start in 1690. We didn't get the millennium, but we got maybe the next best thing. I don't know. Let's move now to the 1260 days, which after the day-year theory is 1260 years. The 1260 days mentioned in Revelation 11 through 13, we're going to look at them in depth shortly. But some people thought the 1260 days slash years would end. So the 1,000 years, these numbers are when it would start. The 1260 years would end with 1260. Can anyone remember who held that view?
Benedictine monk.
Yes, he was a Benedictine monk, and his name was Joachim of Fiore, and Ivan Ortu is probably working tonight. He certainly would have remembered that. 1572, the year of the St. Bartholomew's Day massacre. Other people thought that. 1650 to 1656, or, hedging his bets a little, 1666. Who held that?
Pope
Innocent. No, Thomas Goodwin. Yes, though it began, if you go back 1260, with that. And then we had 1798, And 1798 was the end of the 1260 days, especially according to the
Seventh-day
Adventists. Most recently, and you probably missed it, the 1260 days ended with the fall of the papacy in 2016. Sorry, Brian?
Which didn't happen.
It's still there. And another bite of the cherry, the papacy is going to fall, according to this interpretation of the 1260 days, which are understood to be 1260 years, in 2034. That's the prediction of your friend, Brian, George Doyle. And then 2060, the papacy is going to fall. The papacy was supposed to have fallen these various dates. And another in 2060, the papacy will fall, according to Sir Isaac Newton. And he, of course, made that prediction with all gravity. Let me give you a couple of other predictions. These were ones we mentioned last week. A couple of other predictions. 1792. This was the view of Edward Irving, who was a tongue speaker and believed in prophecies, and through him a new 12 apostles were appointed. One of the figures in the development of Pentecostalism and Charismaticism. He was an apostate from the Church of Scotland who was excommunicated for believing that Christ's human nature was in somehow sort of sinful. So he said 1792. Another said, the Albury group, said 1793. That's when the 1260 days, or as they understand it, 1260 years are going to end. The Albury group met at the big house of Henry Drummond, and Edward Irving was one of the men who spoke to that prophetic, charismatic, sort of revivalist, pietistic group. But he thought it would be the year before what they thought. You'll recognize 1792, 1793, and then 1798. They're all events connected with the French Revolution. There was a lot of interest in prophetic things at that time. Now, I've consulted a couple of others in the last few days regarding this period of 1260 days, understood as 1260 years. James Durham, 17th century Scot. Albert Barnes, who died in 1870, an American Presbyterian. Anyway, these men, in their commentaries on the book of Revelation, they go with the day-year theory. 1260 days equals 1260 years. But, unlike the people whose dates I've listed here, they didn't like to hazard when the 1260 begins and when it ends, because, and this is especially the case when you get to Albert Barnes, because, well, there's so many different options. And then how do you know, why is this date significant for a beginning? Why is this date significant for its ending? And Albert Barnes died in 1870. You know, the papacy was still there. If you go back from 1870, 1260 years, the papacy's older than that. So he's in real diffs. And then when you get to 2021, our year, and go back 1260 years, It gets completely, well, just falls to the ground. It doesn't fit. Now, after last week's class, and this idea of the 1260 days equaling 1260 years, I thought to myself, who was the first in history to argue for the day equals year in connection with the 1260 years? And as far as my research, looking at the different books, Joachim of Fiore was the first one. And of course, Joachim of Fiore was another charismatic. He believed that he saw visions, a charismatic monk, and he was a false prophet. He made not just this prediction that in the year 1260, the 1260 years of Revelation 11 through 13 would fulfill,
that didn't happen, the age of the Spirit to begin, but he made predictions about a whole slew of things which turned out to be false. And then I was listening to a YouTube video by a guy who has lots of videos on the history of eschatology and the interpretation of Revelation. And he said, and this guy's researched it, he said that he believes that Joachim of Fiore was indeed the first guy to come up with the day-year theory as applied to 1260 days, which, if true, and it seems to be true, it's a very bad origin, that 1260 years day-year theory. Any questions or comments on any of that? Just a little bit of a review, and then a couple of updates. Now let's move from historical examples of date setting in connection with the 1,000 years or the 1260 days, moving from the historical examples of date setting to the 1260 days in Scripture in the book of Revelation. Let's turn to the relevant verses from Revelation 11, 12, and 13. Revelation 11, verse 2. Revelation 11, verse 2. The court which is without the temple, leave out and measure it not. For it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. 42 m. On the board. 11 verse 2 refers to 42 m. Chapter 11 verse 3. God says, I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. So if 11 verse 2 refers to 42 months, 11 verse 3 refers to 1,260 days. Now chapter 12, the chapter we read together, chapter 12 verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. So 12 verse 6, 1,260 D. 12 verse 14 is the fourth passage. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the face of the serpent. So a time, times, one time plus two times plus half a time is 3.5 t for times.
Sorry, huh? 12:14.
Yes, that's chapter 12, verse 14 there. Then chapter 13, verse 5. There was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. So there's our fifth, our fifth and final passage. Revelation 13, verse 5, refers to 42 months. So in these three chapters, Revelation 11, Revelation 12, Revelation 13, we have the following three time periods. 1,260 days, twice. 42 months, twice. And 3.5 times, once. Now, let's look more carefully at these three terms. Let's look just at the numbers themselves. You may well know where we're going here, but we need to trace it out step by step so that everybody's on board and everybody is clear. If we take 30 days in a month, how many days are there in 42 months? 42 times 30. This is multiplication here. 1260.
So 42 months, if you take a month as being 30 days, 42 months equals 1260.
Now, 42 months is how many years? There are, in case anyone's not altogether sure about it, I'm going to assert it, there are 12 months in the year. 3 years, that's 36 months. Half a year is 6 months. 36 plus 6 is, when we've got an accountant in the class, 42. Everybody's clear in that. And if a time, that's one time, and times, that's two times, and half a time, that's half, is added up, that gives you 3.5 times. So we can just circle the whole lot. These three periods are the same. I'm going to give further proof for that later on, but these three periods are the same. 1260 days equals 42 months. Now, I admit that the assumption is a month is 30 days, which, you know, if there's 365 and a quarter days in a year, 30 days is actually the closest you can get to dividing it by 12. 1260 days equals 42 months equals 3.5 years. And again, I want to make explicit, the sort of assumption here is that the 3.5 times equals 3.5 years. And because 42 months equals 1260 days, and then in this context, the 3.5 times are in there. Because somebody could say, well, you didn't make the day-year theory, but then you're making the times-year theory. And I say, but I have support for this. They're all found together, and they all fit. Now, besides looking at the number themselves in terms of days, months, and years, which is what we understand the times to refer to, are there any other indications in Revelation 11 through 13, besides the fact that the numbers add up, are there any other indications in Revelation 11 through 13 that these three time periods are the same? And the answer to that is...
Must be.
Why would he be saying it? First of all, let's go to the first two verses that deal with this time period. That is Revelation 11 verse 2 and 12 verse 3. The argument here is the next verse. Verse 2. The holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. And the very next verse says, I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1260 days. The very next verse. So when the term is first used, the 42 months, then the very next verse uses another way of speaking of the 42 months, that is 1260 days. So that's the next verse argument. When it's first mentioned, the very next verse gives you an equivalent. My second argument comes not from Revelation 11, but Revelation 12. And here it's not the next verse argument, but the same idea argument. Revelation 12, verse 6. The woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1260 days. Chapter 12, verse 14. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished, for a time and times and half a time. 3.5 times. Now, the same idea is mentioned in both verses. Chapter 12, verse 6, and just look at it with your eyes while you listen to this. In chapter 12, verse 6, the woman is in her place in the wilderness, where she is fed. See that? The woman fled into the wilderness where she had a place prepared of God that they should feed her there 1260 days. In 12 verse 14, the woman in her place in the wilderness is nourished. So in one verse, 6, she's fed. And in verse 14, she's nourished. 3.5 times. To the woman were given 2 wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place where she is nourished, for 3.5 times. So the woman in her place in the wilderness is fed, verse 6, and the woman in her place in the wilderness is nourished, verse 14. And the woman in her place in the wilderness is fed for 1260 years, and the woman in her place in the wilderness is nourished for 3.5 times. So with chapter 11, verses 2 and 3, I said the 42 months and the 1260 days are the same, not only numerically, but they're the same. It's hinted at in that the very next verse mentions the second of those time periods. In chapter 12, it's the same idea. The woman in her place in the wilderness is either fed or nourished for 1260 days, verse 6, or 3.5 times, verse 14. Brian?
No, my mind's just thinking about the woman in her place. She's in the world, but not of the world, as the church is.
Okay, you're making a good theological point, Brian. Yeah. Our third argument, from the next verse argument to the same idea argument, the next argument is based on what we might call the first and the last. The first and the last. The first reference, chapter 11, verse 2, 42 months. And then the last reference, 13, verse 5, 42 months. Then the 42 months is the same thing as the 1260 days, chapter 11, verse 3, the next verse. And then chapter 12, verse 6, and chapter 12, verse 14, 1260 days, 3.5 times, they're the same because they're saying the same thing. And then the first verse that deals with this period, 11 verse 2, and the last one, 13 verse 5, it serves as a sort of inclusio, and they refer to the 42 months. So I'm arguing that the 1260 days equals 42 months equals the 3.5 times years numerically, as we just did. And secondly, there are other indications in the passage itself. Yep. Now, this position which I've been arguing, that whether it's in months or days or time slash years, is not something unique to me. It is not something unique even to amillennialism. The various eschatological schools, most of them actually believe that the 1260 days, 42 months, 3.5 times, are the same. That is, the argument from the numbers, 1260 days, it was 42 months, it was 3.5 years, they say, yeah, that I get that. And I don't know if all of them have thought that through, but the argument from the very next verse, chapter 11, verse 2, and chapter 11, verse 3, and chapter 12, verse 6, and chapter 12, verse 14, being saying basically the exact same thing. Then the first and last of the 5 references in these 2 chapters serving as an inclusio with the 42 months, that this has convinced them. So, what about the dispensationalists? I'm not talking now about when this period begins and ends, but do the dispensationalists agree with us that the 3.5 times, 42 months, 1,260 days are all the same?
I think so.
Brian thinks so. Henry thinks so. Yeah. For the dispensations, this period of 3.5 years, 1,260 days, 42 months, especially the 3.5 years, is important. And they say all the passages are referring to the same thing. What about the post-millennialist reconstructionists? Do they think at this period, whether in days, months, or years, is the same? What do they think? Remember, we had the handout with the 5 different schools. The dispensationalists think they're the same. The post-millennial reconstructionists, they think they all repair to the same period as well. What about the post-millennialists, the historic post-millennialists? Do they think it refers to the same period? They do. And what about the amillennialists? Do we think? Well, you'd hardly be saying that it wasn't. Okay, so four out of the five schools. So as I say, this isn't just me. This is, you know, you read an amillennial commentator or someone in eschatology, they'll say the same thing. And the dispensations say these three periods are the same. And the post-millennial reconstructionists, they'll say the same thing. And the post-mills, the historic post-mills, will say the same thing too. Regarding the historic premillennialists, I mean, there may be some individuals in the four previous categories that sort of have a dissenting voice, but at the very least, the majority of them hold it. Among the pre-mills, the historic pre-mills, I did consult before this class a chap called Barton Payne, and in looking at the various passages in his Encyclopedia of Biblical Prophecy, he saw this one, the 42 months of chapter 11, verse 2, he thought, well, that refers to AD 70. Which would actually, just let you in a bit of what we're going to come to that, which would be the position of the post-millennial reconstructionists. But then, whenever he dealt with the rest of the references, the other four, in reading his book, it was very unclear what he referred them to, but he didn't refer them all to AD 70. And the one thing he kept saying, and his exegesis was inconclusive, he kept saying, Revelation 11 is a very difficult chapter, and Revelation 12 is a very difficult chapter, and Revelation 13 is a very difficult chapter, and these numbers is just tricky. Which actually means
he didn't understand.
Because his historic premillennialism didn't know how to make head or tail of Revelation 11, 12, or 13. That was a particularly difficult passage, chapters to fit with his system of interpretation. But probably the historic pre-mill view is the least widely held view of eschatology in our day. And he's in the minority. Even if he represents post the historic pre-mill view, that's only one out of five that disagrees with him. Now, you may have been wondering about this grid on the or chart on the whiteboard. Can everybody see that? Does the lectern block it for somebody? Is the writing large enough? Okay, I got a nod from the back row, so if the people in the back row can see it, then presumably everybody else can. Now we're going to look at these periods, 1260 days, 42 months, 3.5 times, in connection now with the various schools of interpreting the book of Revelation. We will start with the preterists, and you'll see why we're starting with the preterists. And we're going to deal particularly with the modern preterists. And the word preterist contains that a word meaning
before
or past, yes. Before, preter, before. So that we're referring to the past. And we're dealing with those preterists who say the book of Revelation was fulfilled in the past in terms of the first century AD. So we're dealing here not with an eschatological school, that'd be A-mill, pre-mill, post-mill, but an interpretive school, that is, a school for interpreting the book of Revelation. Now, the school to which you belong and your interpretation of the book of Revelation is going to be mightily influenced with and dovetail with, ordinarily, your millennial school, your view of eschatology. So there's a school of eschatology, and there's a school of interpreting the book of Revelation. We're dealing with preterists, who interpret the book of Revelation by saying it deals chiefly with things, events, in the past, and those preterists who put it in the past, not merely with regard to Constantine, let's say in the 4th century, but with regard to the 1st century. Their view of the 1260 days, now the next question is, what do the 1260 days refer to? Their view of the 1260 days, literal or non-literal? Literal, says Julian, and he is right. These preterists believe that the 1260 days, and therefore the 42 months, and therefore the 3.5 times years, are literal.
It's referring to a literal 3.5 years in the past, in the first century. So, the 1260 days, according to the preterists, what do they refer to? AD 70. It's referring, therefore, to a literal 3.5 years in connection with AD 70, which is the date for the fall of Jerusalem to the Roman Empire. And which eschatological school is most inclined to go the way of preterism, that the book of Revelation was written before AD 70, predicted AD 70? Which eschatological school holds that view?
Postmillennial.
Which sort? The post-mill reconstructionists. See, because the post-millennial reconstructionist wants to put apostasy and the beast in the past, and therefore they're preterists when they read the book of Revelation. What are the objections? Not to post-millennial reconstructionism in general, we don't have enough time for that, but objections to this idea of the 1260 days, 42 months, referring to AD 70. Here's one. Revelation 11 verse 2, the first mention of this period, talks about the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. They take the holy city literally there to refer to Jerusalem. They take the temple of God to refer to the temple of God in Jerusalem before AD 70 and before it was destroyed. Well, the Romans didn't trample underfoot the city of Jerusalem in AD 70 42 months. They besieged it, and then they came in, and they didn't trample underfoot 42 months. You could make a stab at saying that they were in Judea for 42 months, but even that doesn't actually fit. But the passage doesn't say they're going to trample Judea, the zone, the region, underfoot. It says they're going to trample the holy city, Jerusalem, underfoot. Besides that, the Romans governed the Promised Land and Jerusalem not just for 3.5 years, but for centuries. The Romans came in, conquered the Promised Land, including Jerusalem, and ruled over it for a long time. And then, of course, the Romans came in. There was another uprising in the next century, and the Romans came in and slaughtered the Jews in Jerusalem and then devastated Jerusalem and renamed it Aelia Capitolina. They gave it a new name, and they said, we don't want the Jews going back there. We're not even allowed to name your own, keep the name of your own city. So, the preterists, they say the book of Revelation, including the 1260 days, which they take literal, are all in the past. Then we move to the historicists. The historicists. And the key to the meaning of the historicist interpretive school comes from the word history. The historicists see the book of Revelation as being like history written beforehand. So Revelation chapter 6 deals with things in the early church, and then Revelation 7 moves a bit forward to the next century or two, and then we get to the Muslims in chapter 9. They're the locusts. The Saracen invasions, and then there's the fall of Constantinople in 1453 is in there. The Reformation in the 16th century is in there. Jan Hus in the 1400s and Wycliffe in the 1300s. The Waldensians are in there. The Crusades and it all sort of. So, what is the historicist view of the 1260 days? Do they hold that it's literal? No, they don't. What do they hold? Think of last week. So what do you think? What do they hold regarding the 1260 days? What's their way of interpreting that?
Well, they take the days as years.
Yes. Yes, theirs is the day-year theory. So they're not literal. This is far from literal. The day equals a year. And if you think of the timelessness of God in Psalm 90 or 2 Peter 3 with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years. With the historicists, one day is as 1 year. What do they see the 1260 days as referring to? Well, if it's a day year theory, they say there's 1260 years, referring to the period of the papacy. From its rise at the start of the 1260 years to its end. So the 1260 days is a period involving AD 70, that's the preterists. The historicists say the 1260 years, that's the period when the papacy rises and when it falls. And of course, it was going to fall in 1572 or 1650 or 1666 or 1792 or 1793 or 1798 or 2016. And write it down in your calendars, maybe 2034.
I'm just wondering, when do they refer to the papacy as starting? Was it the time of Constantine?
Well, you see, I just wrote there to save myself a little bit of time on the board when it ended. But because last week I wrote when it started. So this one here would be zero. So there you see, this is the difficulty what they have with... This is why Albert Barnes and Durham didn't bother actually saying when it started and when it ended, because when did the papacy arise?
Constantine, I think.
Well, yeah, Constantine. But then Constantine, when he takes over, Constantine didn't immediately elevate the Pope. He has to get himself established. And then when he elevated the Pope, he said several things that helped the Pope onwards. But then later on, you see, the Pope, you see, the donation of Constantine, which is a medieval forgery, and then there were the Papal States, and then there was the Code of Justinian, and then Gregory the First was a powerful pope, and he increased his powers. And so did Leo the First. You know, when did it begin? I mean, when did Manchester City become a good team again? Well, they're a good team now, but they weren't typically very good. But then they got new owners, and then they got a new manager, and then they won a tournament. I mean, when did they start to become good? Well, there are several things to it. I just mentioned that because that's a relatively simple thing. Where you say, when did the Russians take over Siberia? Well, whenever they first sort of crossed over the Urals, or whenever they got to Lake Baikal, or whenever they got to Vladivostok, or whenever they consolidated, or... And then when did the papacy end? Well, it's at various blows, and it's been limited at various stages, but, I mean, it's still going. So we've been talking just in general about some of the objections, but let's fill in this. What eschatological school particularly fits with the historicist interpretive school regarding the book of Revelation?
Historic post-mills?
Historic post-mills, yes. And you see, if the historic post-mills, they believe in a future earthly golden age, and if the 1260 days are over and the papacy has fallen, then you get them off the scene, and then you can have your golden age. The next interpretive school, after the preterist and the historicist, the next interpretive school regarding the book of Revelation is that of the futurists. So what do you think is the key idea in the word futurists that points us as to what they're about? The future. So if the preterists are all about it happening, the events of this book happening before now, in the past, the historicists say it's in history and it takes 1260 years. The futurists say it's in the future. So the seals in Revelation 6, for instance, as well as the trumpets, of course, and the vials, none of the seals have been opened, none of the trumpets have been blown, and none of the vials have been poured out. That's all going to happen in the future. What are the futurists, their view of the 1260 days? What is their view? Literal? Day year?
Literal.
So at this point, Gary North, who and the preterists of the postmillennial reconstructionists, agree with the futurists. They all believe in a literal 1260 days. And
the 1260 days for the futurists, the 1260 days in the book of Revelation refer to what? They come in the future. When in the future? In the 7-year tribulation. And then Mary added half of it because it's 3.5 times 3.5 years. It's a 7-year tribulation. Then you get into the issue of pre-trib, mid-trib, and post-trib. Big issues you've wrestled with, I'm sure, Dale, over the years. Yep. So, which eschatological school holds the futurist interpretation of the book of Revelation?
Dispensationalists.
By the way, are you finding this helpful? Just because it helps with the 1260, but since the 1260 days are in the book of Revelation, Revelation 11 through 13, it helps with the book of Revelation that fits with the eschatological schools. And if we were to come to objections, where would we start? We have enough room in the whiteboard, so we're just going to move on. The fourth view, and I don't like the name for it, the fourth view is the idealist view. I'm in this category, by the way. I don't really think of myself as an idealist. Would you say I'm an idealist, Hilary?
No.
No, not really. No. Realist, I think, would be more my sort of view, but then I suppose everybody thinks they're a realist. So the idealist, what's the key in the word here?
Ideas.
The book of Revelation deals with ideas. And by ideas, what we mean is the book of Revelation deals with grand, sweeping truths. You're not to tie this particular verse to something that happened in the 300s or the 800s. You're not to say, well, like the preterists, that whole chapter took place 2,000 years ago. Or like the futurists, that chapter has actually nothing to do with you now. This is what's going to happen to Jews in part of a 7-year tribulation when hopefully, if you non-dispensationalists have been raptured, and you won't be there, we hope, say the futurist dispensationalists. So, what is our view of the 1260 days? Do we believe the 1260 days are literal?
No.
Do we believe the day-year theory?
No.
Our idea of the 1260 days is that they are symbolic. Just like Revelation 1 verse 1 says, that God gave the revelation of Jesus Christ, who conveyed it to an angel, who gave it to John, who wrote it down and gave it to the church, and presented it all in the form of signs. These are signifying, symbolic persons, symbolic events, symbolic numbers, symbolic colors. And we refer the 1260 days to what? Do we say AD 7? Do we say it's all about the dark ages of the papacy? Do we say a future 7-year tribulation? What do we say the 1260 days describes? Brian?
Is it the whole period from the first coming of Christ to the second coming?
It is indeed. It is indeed. It's the period from the first coming to the second coming. We're going to prove that. We're going to prove that shortly. So, which school of eschatology holds the idealist interpretive school of the book of Revelation? Which one does it fit best with? Mm-hmm. Though I don't like the word idealist. I wish we'd come up with something better.
Amel.
And so you can see, with these four schools of the book of Revelation, you can see they cover four of the five eschatological schools. And remember we said earlier that it's the historical pre-mills that actually seem to struggle, at least if Barton Payne's any indication, struggle with what to do with Revelation 11, 12, and 13, what to do with these numbers. Well, yeah, because they're not even on that chart. And what are the objections to the idealist interpretation of the 1260 days, Brian?
They say we spiritualize everything.
Okay, but I'm talking about what they say. I'm talking about what are the real objections. There are none, because it's the right view.
Yep, very good. Well, I teach the class, so I get to say like that, Salome.
And it's true as well. Right, let's now move to Revelation 11 through 13 itself. to learn where these 1260 days equals 42 months equals 3.5 times or years begin and end.
Because I have asserted here that they refer to the first and second coming and not a 7-year tribulation and not the period of the papacy and not AD 70, but we need to establish this from the text itself.
We're going to begin with Revelation 12, which is in the middle of the three chapters. We'll focus first of all on Revelation 12, verses 1 through 6 at the start of the chapter. The woman, I want to say more about her next week, as I mentioned to Timmy in the car park on Sunday. The woman, in the first few verses and indeed throughout the chapter, the woman, according to Rome, is
Mary.
The Virgin Mary. Some might even say the papal church. But the truth of the woman in Revelation 12, she is
the church.
The church. The church. The woman is the church. And the woman brings forth Christ in verse 5. She, the church, brought forth a man-child, and Christ is, of course, male, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron. That's a reference to Psalm 2, which Revelation and other chapters, other books make clear is Jesus. And her child was caught up unto God. What's the one word that sums that up?
Ascension.
Caught up unto God and to his throne. And what's the one word that refers to?
Session.
His session at God's right hand. So he's caught up unto God, into heaven, and to God's throne, and now he rules. Now, what happens upon Christ's ascension and session? He's caught up to God, verse 5, and verse 6 says, the woman fled into the wilderness. Now, the church is in the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1260 days. So when does the 1260 days, 42 months, 3.5 times begin? It begins with the birth of the man-child, his ascension into heaven, the session at God's right hand, his rule over the nations. Which is the first coming. Now let's focus on the middle and end of the chapter, especially Revelation 12, verses 13 and 14, with verse 14 mentioning the 3.5 years or times. We saw that verse 5 refers to the exaltation of Christ. Verse 7 says that Satan is expelled from heaven upon the exaltation of Christ. So there's war in heaven. The Michael and his angels fight against the dragon, Satan and his angels, and there's no room for them anymore in heaven. And Satan did have access to heaven in Job chapters 1 and 2 in the Old Testament. So the devil is now cast out. And he's cast out from heaven onto the earth. Then verse 10, upon the exaltation of Christ into heaven and the expulsion of Satan from heaven. Verse 10 says, I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. So now, with the exaltation of Jesus Christ, salvation, strength, the kingdom of God and the power of Jesus come, because he's on the throne ruling over the universe in the name of the triune God. So, and then if you go to verse 13, the dragon, he's cast out. When he saw that he was cast out to the earth, he persecuted the woman which brought forth the man-child. So he's attacking the church. And to the church were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished by God, for a time, time, and half a times from the face of the serpent. So the 3.5 times in verse 14, they start when Satan, expelled from heaven, persecutes the church. And he has been expelled upon the exaltation of Jesus Christ. And then God preserves and nourishes the church for 3.5 times. The New Testament age, from the first coming of Christ onwards. So when then do the 1260 days mentioned in verse 6, or the 3.5 times or years mentioned in verse 14, when do they end? Well, answer this question. When does the devil cease attacking the woman, the church? Because verse 14 says he's persecuting her and God has to nourish her for 3.5 years. When does the devil cease persecuting the church?
Christ comes again.
Christ comes again. When does God no longer need to protect, feed, and nourish the woman, the church, from the attacks of the devil? When Christ comes again. So Revelation 20 tells us that the 1260 days, 3.5 times, begins with the first coming of Christ and ends with the second coming, when the devil is cast into the lake of fire and when God glorifies the church so that she's no longer persecuted. She is radiant in splendor. Now, let's look at further support in this block of material, Revelation 11 through 13. Further support for the end of the 1260 days, or 3.5 times, or 42 months, by looking at Revelation 11, verses 3 through 19, the passage on the two witnesses. How long do the two witnesses give their testimony? Yes, 1260 days, according to chapter 11, verse 3. So then they're doing their prophecy, and they get persecuted and so forth, and then they are slain. And the seventh angel sounded, verse 15, and there were great voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. What does that refer to?
The new heaven and new earth.
The new heavens and the new earth, the eternal state. That's when the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ. He's going to reign forever and ever. Some of the references to, you know, the kingdoms of the world becoming God's kingdoms, you could refer that to the first coming of Christ. And that's similar sort of language in part in chapter 12, verse 10. But the two witnesses are witnessing. And then they're slain. So it can hardly refer to like two witnesses who came before Jesus. And then when they're slain, Christ reigns. That doesn't make any sense. Let's look at verse 18. Verse 18. The nations were angry. The nations are angry. And they're especially angry at the very end. Second, thy wrath is come. When does God's wrath and the wrath of the Lamb come? Second coming of Christ at the end of Revelation 16. Third reference, the time of the dead. I mean, is 2021 the time of the dead? No, the dead they're just the same that they were 3 or 4 years ago. You know, the time of the dead is when the dead are raised. That's the time of the dead. That's when the one thing which will change with them and for us, should we die before Christ's second coming. The time of the dead, that they should be judged. Ah, when are the dead judged? We call that the final judgment. And that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants, the prophets, and to the saints. When does God reward his people? We're back at the final judgment. That's the positive of the final judgment. We are rewarded. And shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. So the time of the dead has come, that they should be judged. And then comes the positive, the reward. And that God should destroy them which destroy the earth. That's the final judgment in the negative sense regarding the goats issuing in their eternal punishment. The 1260 days mentioned in connection with the two witnesses in Revelation 11 verse 13. This unit ends with verse 15, the new heavens and the new earth, and verse 18, which is the day of the wrath of the Lamb, the resurrection of the dead, the final judgment, when some are rewarded and others, the wicked, are destroyed. I say again, the 1260 days end with Christ's second coming, just as they did in Revelation chapter 12. Now, this view that the 1260 days, 42 months, or 3.5 times / years is the first coming to the second coming of Christ, that period, this fits with all of the four sections in Revelation 11 through 13. Revelation 11 through 13 is three chapters. But Revelation 11 through 13 consists of four sections. Revelation 12 is one section, the woman and the dragon. Revelation 13 is one section, the two beasts, the beast from the sea and the beast from the land. And Revelation 11 consists of two sections. Verses 1 through 2 is the temple. Then verses 3 through 19, you have the two witnesses. So chapter 11 deals with the temple, and then the two witnesses. Chapter 12, the woman and the dragon, and then chapter 13, the two beasts. So most of chapter 11 is on the two witnesses, and all of chapter 13 is on the two beasts. Now, let me give you a couple of supporting or confirming arguments or points regarding these 1260 days, etc., when they begin and when they end. The first point is that B.B. Warfield agrees with us. Why is it significant to have B.B. Warfield agreeing with us as to the 42 months, 1260 days, 3.5 times being all referring to the same period, and that this period is the first to the second coming? Why is it good to have B.B. Warfield agree with us?
I think he was a postmillennialist.
He was a postmillennialist. He was a postmillennialist. And B.B. Warfield was a very ardent postmillennialist. He's one of the most ardent postmillennialists before the most ardent postmillennialist possibly in the history of the world came along, the Christian Reconstructionists. So he was a postmillennialist. He agrees that these periods are the same, and he agrees that the 1260 days is from the first coming to the second coming. B.B. Warfield is a postmillennialist, an ardent postmillennialist, and he's a very capable exegete. And here's this ardent postmillennialist who's a capable exegete, and he is not content with either of the two theories which would support his postmillennialism. He believes he can still salvage it, and which the two other forms of postmillennialism, the two main forms, go for. He's looked at the day-age theory of historicism. No. It doesn't refer to 1260 years of the papacy. It refers to the first coming to the second coming. That's his conclusion. And with regard to it being AD 70, with, you know, a sort of a literal 3.5 years, well, that doesn't actually fit with history, never mind fit with the text. This is what B.B. Warfield writes in his article, The Millennium and the Apocalypse. Quote, "The term 3.5 years does not occur in the Apocalypse, 3.5 years, because it says 3.5 days. But its equivalents, 42 months, 11 verse 2, 13 verse 5, and 1260 days, 11 verse 3, 12 verse 6, do, as well as the corresponding phrase, a time and times and half a time, 12 verse 14, which is derived, of course, from Daniel 7 verse 25 and 12 verse 7. All these designations alike express the whole time of the church's militant and suffering condition in the world, the whole time between the first and second coming of the Lord." An ardent postmillennialist, the capable exegete, says, the day year doesn't work. The literal 1260 days referring to AD 70, no, it's referring to the first coming to the second coming of Jesus Christ. This, of course, also fits with, and this is our second point, this fits with our chart. There we are, waving it again. The chart by Dean Davis, the handout. There's the fourth column, the period from the first coming to the second coming. The six seals in Revelation, six or seven seals in Revelation chapter 6 and 7. The seven trumpets in chapters 8 and 11, first to the second coming. The woman and the dragon, chapters 12 through 14, first to second coming. Seven vials, chapter 15 to 16, first to second coming. The fall of the dragon's helpers, chapters 17 to 19, first to second coming. And the thousand years in Revelation 20, first to second coming. By the way, we're talking here tonight about
these time periods, 1260 days and the equivalents in Revelation 11 through 13, you may notice that Revelation 11 falls in with the block of material, the seven trumpets, and Revelation 12 and 13 falls in with the woman and the dragon, chapters 12 through 14, which is actually another argument for the unity of the book and the synchronicity of the periods, recapitulation, all going from the first to the second coming of Christ, bringing out different traits, ideas, grand truths, looking at this period from different perspectives, so it's always relevant to the people of God, not referring to what happened in the first century, not referring to what is going to happen after the church is raptured with the Jews of the Middle East, but referring to the church that could always derive benefit from it. Any questions or comments on that?
Mary? Is there some significance in that number?
Mary's asking, is there some significance in that number? Mary, I'm glad you asked that and I didn't put Mary up to this. This brings us into our final section, just to whet your appetite, Lord willing, for next week. We're going to conclude our treatment of the two key periods in Revelation next week, Lord willing, namely the 1,000 years, Revelation 20, and the 1,260 days, Revelation 11 through 13. This will be the 12th class dealing with that, and that makes for a handy box set of CDs, amongst other things. But what we're going to look at, amongst other things, we're going to deal with the four passages in Revelation 11 through 13 very briefly, otherwise we're not going to get it all fitted in. Revelation 11, 1 to 2 on the temple and city. Revelation 11, 3 through 9 on the two witnesses. Revelation 12 on the woman and the dragon. Revelation 13 on the two beasts. And I'm going to look at some interesting fulfillments of these by fulfillments, claim fulfillments, including Joanna Southcott. And I want to say, whenever we do go through these, if these four periods deal with the first to the second coming, they actually say an awful lot against post-millennialism. And then we're going to deal with what Mary said. Why does it have this days? Why does it have months? And why are these 3.5 times? And then I plan to relate the 1260 days to the millennium. Why these different terminology? How does this fit? What does this contribute to the last days and to the two ages? And we'll end there.